There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Easy to get in touch with the show as well. 251-343-0106. For a call or a text, 251-343-0106. Plus, I got some talkback messages. We'll get those on later in the hour. Also, I'll just answer this one quickly here. Talk about it later. But Jarhead said, after my commentary from last hour, Sean, I would like to know how much money the federal government owes Social Security alone. We're talking about where the debt goes. I think the last time I saw it, it's like $2.6 trillion owed to we the people. I know that we talk about the $40 trillion debt. People say, ah, that's all, you know, China. Which, by the way, I think Japan actually holds more of our debt. Isn't that crazy than China? But it's like 12% or sub-12%. The bulk of it is owed to we the people. So, yeah, there you go. It's like 2.6 or something like that. $1 trillion owed to we the people. All right. So just put that on your, you know, things to worry about list for the weekend. All right. I look up and I saw him walk in the lobby. My buddy, Captain Richard Rutland, cold-blooded fishing, veteran, served our country with the U.S. Navy, and now plies the waters in smaller craft than you did in the Navy. What were you in the Navy? What ship?
I was on the USS Eisenhower.
Okay.
I was an aviation structural mechanic, worked on helicopters.
It's pretty cool. I mean, think about those guys now. Think about your time in service and think about those guys over in the Strait of Hormuz now and all that.
Yeah. Actually, I had when I was deployed, we had went through the Strait of Hormuz several times, and we had I remember having live torpedoes hooked on our helicopters, and some of the guys, older guys.
Right.
Telling us that's the first time they've ever seen a live torpedo on a helicopter. You know,
and how old are you at that point?
20 years old, 19 years old.
Your eyes are probably big as saucers here going, what?
Y'all have I know. We'd seen plenty of them training torpedoes mm-hmm. on helicopters. But,
and they said those are live, the real thing?
Oh, yeah. That was our whole, one of our biggest missions was anti-submarine warfare. So it was, they were definitely worried about it we were going through.
And look, it's still happening, and those sailors serving now in the Strait. All right, so, and we'll get you back in November when we do Veterans Month. Talk about your service. I do want to talk about what's going on in our bay. You and I have talked through this process of thin layer placement. And what you're seeing out there, you are a full-time fishing guide. You spend the time on the water. And, you know, y'all and you know our friend group were some of the people that were originally just telling me, Sean, look at this. It's not just, it's piling up places that, you know, and they point out because we all kind of fish the same areas, you know, and said, that's got 2 feet of mud on it. I'm like, no, that doesn't have it. And I'd say, holy crap, go out there and look at it. Y'all were some of the people sounding the warnings early.
For sure. Patrick Garmison and I were two of the whistleblowers mm-hmm. on when we saw all this starting to go down. I immediately had a bad feeling when I saw that how they were disposing of the spoil a long time ago. And never really did anything about it. And Patrick really picked the torch up and ran with it. And then, of course, brought me along with mm-hmm. him because I was seeing a lot of the same things. But it was very intimidating. Who do you go to? Who do you talk to? How do we go about this thing as far as getting the making the public aware of it and getting something done? Mobile Bay Keeper was a very, very useful avenue to help us bring awareness. Taking Patrick and I to Washington a couple times to mm-hmm. Sit in front of our senators.
How did you cage it to that? How just the brief of what you told our senators?
I mean, the one, we sat down with the coach and we got to sit down with Katie Britt. And I remember sitting in front of Katie Britt And she was talking about what she has done with Alabama Wildlife Federation with the oyster restoration project. And I was like, you know, I'm sorry, Senator Britt, but, you know, whatever oyster restoration you're doing is really, it's not going to make an effect at all, because all we're doing is getting, it's getting smothered. It's getting covered up.
Yeah, you're wasting money.
Yeah, you're wasting money. And I mean,
what was the reaction to that?
Well, I had her attention very quickly when I said that, and I hate to admit this on radio, but I got very emotional talking to her about that, because it was, I start thinking about our future generations, like my kids and their kids and all that, and it's like, are we going to have anything left by the time we get done with any of this? You know, like, yeah. Right now, there is such a huge lack of oyster shells, like living oysters in seagrass beds up and down the eastern and western shore of Mobile Bay. And it's like, if that doesn't jump off the page and send up, you know, red flags all over the place, what does? Because you remember a day when it was everywhere.
And you think about this. I could tell stories from my friends' fathers and grandfathers what it used to look like. And that's, I think, lost a lot of people. But just in my lifetime, you know, I think about the western shore of Mobile Bay. And I think it came up, we were talking, one day on the show, we started talking about soft shells, how much I love a spider sandwich, soft shells. And I said, we used to go where Nancy's used to be.
Yeah.
And that was like, we'd go.
That was the spot.
And the grass that was there, that those crabs would get in to molt, was just a blanket down there. Even to the point that used to be enough ducks down there to shoot down along the fringe, right down there. I spend time there now. I have friends that live down there. It's not there.
There's not a blade of grass.
No.
Anywhere.
And that's just in my life. Mean, that's from the time I was in my 20s, probably, and I'm 54 now. So,
right.
That's pretty fast.
Yeah. It's scary. It's really scary to think about. And you talk about wasteful, something that really jumps off the page at me at wasteful. When you talk about the Corps of Engineers and the thin layer placement, they say 35% of the spoil that they take out of the channel and put onto the flats of the bay falls right back into the channel. So they're just moving the same dirt over and over 30% of the time.
Sounds like a bake work job.
I mean, you know, you talk about wasteful spending.
Yes.
How many times are you going to move the same particle of dirt out of the ship channel onto the flat? You know, it's just.
You know, what's tough about this, Richard, is there's a nuanced discussion because, and if people don't follow this and aren't nerds like we are on this stuff, they could get bowled over by this. Deltas and systems like ours happen because of sedimentation. Stuff comes down the rivers, has been before there were people here. And water slows down because of tide and spread and drops out. So we are here. We have this great delta and estuary because of sediment. But it's the difference between saying, hey, I don't know what the recommended daily allowance is, at 2,100 calories, whatever a grown man's supposed to eat.
Right.
That's healthy. You're supposed to eat that. But when you pack on the super shake and all the, you know, all the other stuff, it's not good for you. And that's what I think we're looking at here, is there's a certain amount of sediment supposed to come down through the bay. It's been happening for eons. But now we are, and I don't know the number. I think it was 5 or 10 or 15 times what the normal sediment load would be in a muddy year is what we're putting back on top of it.
Right. It's just,
it doesn't have time to cycle through and get the stuff out.
And the longer that I have, I don't know, just my experience on the water all the time and seeing what's happening all the time, I am all about letting nature do nature. You know, like let's try to keep this as natural as we can.
Yeah.
And you know, we're hindsight's always 20/20, you know what I mean? We do things and we see the repercussion years on down the road, and you look at like the Tennessee Tom Bigby waterway.
Right.
Adding that much more water flow and sediment to our system. And you know, we start talking about unnatural things. This project that we've got coming up that the port's gonna do south of the causeway.
Yeah.
That's another
one I think, and we're gonna come back from the break and talk about that. So the danger of it is the way I was talking about sediment being a normal part, but super amounts of it's not. I could argue that putting sediment in a marsh island is a good thing.
Right.
Places for baby shrimp and baby crabs, you know, and ducks and fish and invertebrates and all that stuff. but where you put it is important as well. We're coming right back. More with Captain Richard Rutland right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 121 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. My guest, Captain Richard Rutland. Michael says it seems like Richard and Patrick are more scientists now than regular fishing guides with how many tags they put out. And do you keep a number how many fish you tag in a year?
I don't.
But, it's a lot.
But it's a lot.
It's a crap ton.
Yeah, it's a lot.
By the way, we encourage everybody to do that, but of course take the course through CCA to make sure you know how to do the tagging.
That's right. Yep. I tell you what really makes them eyebrows raise is how many of these giant triple tail we've let go with this acoustic tagging stuff that we're doing, you know, catching just real nice, beautiful fish. And
we're learning, so
putting a tag in them and letting them go, you know, a lot of all the biggest fish I've caught, I've put a tag in them and let them go, you know, so
it's hard.
It is, I guess, but what's
interesting is just some of the stuff that come back talking to Dr. Sean Powers is like these ideas that we had about how fish move in and out of our system are like somewhat true, but not completely true. You know, like we learned that with tarpon way back, but you know, I always thought that, okay, well, all the blackfish triple tail move inshore during the summer. You know, you see them offshore, but then they move inshore and do their stuff. And they go, he said, yes and no. He said, a lot of them do. And some stay out the whole year offshore.
Right.
And then the next year they may come in. And then they may not. Like, they just.
That's why we're studying them right now, because we literally don't know exactly what they're doing, where they're going. You know, right. There's been several fish that have been tagged here and recaptured in South Florida. There was a blackfish that got tagged here and was recaptured in Mexico.
That's crazy.
800 miles, 700 or 800 miles away.
And there's probably another one tagged that gets recaptured within a half mile of where
they're tagged. Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So they're different.
Some fish get caught three times before they make it out of the bay, you know. But that's blackfish for you.
It's good. We're always learning. It's just I enjoy that from any of the research done, biological research. There's these ideas we had of how things, well, these critters all do this. Well, some of them do. Some of them do another thing that we didn't know. When we went to the break, we're talking about this proposal for an island, we call it a restoration project here. And the big news was made, of course, as Governor and Commissioner Blankenship talked about the allocation of $5 million in Go Mesa money to Alabama Port Authority's Upper Mobile Bay Wetland Creation Project. For people picturing it, Gilliard's probably an example of what we're talking about, although Gilliard has a lot more rock and all that.
Yeah, so I think it's not near the scale that Gilliard Island is. It's not going to be built way up or anything like that.
Right.
From my understanding, from who I've talked to, there's going to be like little...
To the water.
Yeah, it'll be little tributaries. I think there are going to be lots of jetty rocks and stuff around it.
But there's ways for fish and crabs and stuff to get up in it,
to go inside of it, yes. And I think, I don't know if we'll be able to get our bay boats in there, but maybe folks can kayak inside of there or something like that.
Well, so. I don't even really care about getting inside it. What I care about is more of that habitat that makes more fish, more shrimp, more crabs.
Right.
A nursery.
Right. And that...
We just talked about how much we've lost.
I agree.
So I love the idea of more wetland complexes being used. But you and I both got on the same thing, and we've been commenting on Facebook about it and all that. It's the proposed location that leaves me slack-jawed.
I agree 100%. It's and this came up several years ago, and we all talked about it, and it got shut down. I don't know exactly how it got shut down.
Yeah, it was a big thing, and then it was gone.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's exactly just what you said. The location is on one of the most beautiful grass flats that you can find in Upper Mobile Bay. There's plenty of there's all that beautiful ribbon grass and all that, and it's just teeming with fish. Lots of people fly fish and sight cast redfish, and
some of them may gig flounder. I don't know if they gig flounder.
There's so much going on right there.
Yes.
And what a lot of folks don't really realize, and why I've really gotten behind, why is all the grass gone in Mobile Bay? The grass serves such a huge purpose for all the fish. When you have little juvenile redfish and speckled trout and croakers and minnows and anything, you know, like just the food chain starts to happen. Everything grows from being little to big. That grass gives cover for all those fish. It gives them a place to hide from predators. They call that predation. So there's no grass, there's nowhere for them to hide. So they all just get eaten up all the time because they're out there in the wide open. And that grass gives them cover and a place to live and a place to grow up and a place to forage on other little things, little seed shrimp and all that. And to go and plop something down on something so natural and so beautiful, just... It's infuriating.
Yeah, it is. Know? I mean, even those of y'all that don't fish the Delta or the Bay, picture the bass pond you love to fish. Why are there trees laid down in it? Why are you put Christmas trees in it? It's to do the same thing, to give those that cover. So this area is already doing it. I love the idea of an additional area that does this, but why would you cover up the area that's already doing it? Why can't we move it south? Why can't we move it to, once you get to, yeah, you probably better judge than me, but by the time you make 6 feet of water or deeper, we don't have that growth.
We're not having it's near
too
the
much
grass
too
growth.
Turbidity. Yeah,
correct.
So no, go out there and do it.
I completely agree. Though on the flip side of that, though, you know, I always try to look at the upside of everything. The one other thing that jumps off the page at me in Mobile Bay is the erosion problems that we have. So this would mitigate some erosion issues. Maybe block some ship wakes from the rest of the causeway, or help build something else up there in that same area. So I don't know. I'm just trying, like I said, trying to look at it glass half full in any capacity.
Well,
that I
no, can. But it would be double important if you didn't cover up the spot we have, put a new place, and you do those things. You build up. It would, as it slows water down, it would itself build more marsh.
Correct.
More flats. As it slows the water down. I mean, that's the whole idea, like, talk about what they're saying about doing maybe down the western shore of Mobile Bay. I mean, maybe this comes from, I don't have a degree in this, but I played in the dirt and water and ditches my whole childhood. You know, if you can have a water break to keep the waves from crashing and that water gets to settle, it'll drop out sediment there and start building land.
Right.
And it's not going to happen overnight, but it sure as heck happens.
Correct.
I mean, like you said, I'm with you. I'm like the judo mentality of nature. Let it work with it, not against it, because it'll kick your butt if you work against it.
You can't control her.
No, but if you work with it, you can make things happen. And we can build up, you know, maybe somebody down the road in 20 years looks at it and says, wow, here's the picture from 2026 shoreline. Now look how far out it is. Look at, maybe we don't keep saying, oh, what it used to be was great, now it's bad. Maybe one day they go, look how bad it was, look how great it is now.
Right. I agree.
So what happens, this process? I mean, it's why I said it was nuanced at the beginning is I'm for this wetlands complex. I'm just not for it there.
Yeah.
What do you hear? I mean, are other people like us that are for it?
I think a lot of people see the danger in doing a restoration project there. And it's really not so much the restoration to me as it's what the adverse situation that it causes to the area around it. You know, if you go, you talk about pumping, you know, hundreds of thousands of cubic yards of material into an area where there's a bunch of natural grass flats. How do you contain all that? How do you keep all that in contained into a system and not let it go everywhere and blanket all the rest of the natural grass that's up there?
Right.
Not to mention what the causeway is having to endure with this bridge project going on. I don't know if you've driven across the Bayway lately. I did this morning, and there's barges and bridges and pilings being put up all over the place. You know, what's going to be the outcome of that?
I don't know. I don't know how much of that, I mean, and things that are going to be stirred up. And I'm for the bridge project. I'm not for the funding mechanism, but the things we're stirring up, we got to think about that too. I mean, you look at the foot of Polecat. I'm not letting out. See, we both fish Polecat.
Yep.
What's down there between layers of sediment is not great.
Right.
I mean, you said the Alcoa tailings ponds and all that. So when we stir that up, where does that go? Hey, we're coming right back. More with Richard Rutland right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right now, 135, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. 251-343-0106 gets you through. I'll say hello to my buddy David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. Let's talk about what's happening on a Friday.
We got a truckload in here yesterday evening, right before we closed. We got a real good-looking Challenger. That's the two-door Dodge sports car-like, and it's that dull gray color. It's absolutely beautiful. Dove or dull, whatever you want to call it. Dull is probably not the best way to describe it, but it's gorgeous. We got a 2021 Jeep Grand Cherokee that came in. We got a 2017 F-250 gas burner that we traded in last night. It's a really nice truck. So we got a great selection.
Okay. Of course, people come visit with y'all on a Saturday, but if they do come over the weekend and you're not there, it's pretty cool. You can just scan the QR code and get all the info.
Yeah, and you know, James is on vacation. He started vacation, so I've been out there doing all that mess myself in this heat.
That oh, God.
That's a lot of work. But I don't care if they're upside down, sideways, or backwards. You can still scan it, and I did it. So if they're upside down, sideways, or backwards, you can blame me. But that will take you directly to our website, directly to that cars page, directly to the link for the Carfax, directly to a page where you can text us or call us, have a conversation with us, whatever you want to do. So it's a really neat little system.
All right, tell them how to find you in person as well. What's the directions?
We're at Highway 90 and Plantation. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. We're the third red light, and we're on the left-hand corner. You can't miss us. You can go to the website, lcmmotorcars.com, or just give us a call, 251-375-0068.
Thanks, David.
Have a great day, buddy.
Hey, you too. There he goes, David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. Continue our conversation with Captain Richard Rutland. This one from Sam says, good afternoon. Hey, we built one island in the bay. How about another? Build another and make it the shape of the state of Alabama. What would you rather have, some dirt-smothered oysters or an island? Every time you land and take off from the new airport, there it is, and you have good oysters. But, yeah, I think this is why I keep coming back to this, and you could disagree or agree. I am for them. To me, that's a beneficial use. Create a wetlands complex. I'm like, yes, good. I like that. Just move it.
Yeah. No, I agree. Gilliard is a great.
Yes.
It's a great place.
Yes. And the waters around Gilliard, if Gilliard wouldn't be there, it's not growing grass.
Right.
There's a certain depth. If y'all don't spend a lot of time outside around here, there's a certain depth where we don't grow grass.
Well, I tell you, and talk about hindsight. I'll never forget being at one of the town hall meetings right when mud dumping first became a thing, us trying to fight it. One of the old oystermen would come, and I can't remember his name, and I'm sorry for not remembering his name, but we started talking about Gilliard Island, and he told us that they built Gilliard Island on top of an oyster bed. There's an oyster bed underneath Gilliard Island somewhere. Way down below.
Does that show you like, where we used to have oyster beds?
Then? Right. There used to be oyster beds up and down all around Gilliard Island, up around Middle Bay Lighthouse on both sides of the ship channel out there in 10 and 12 foot of water. Man, what would that be like these days to have that now? And it's like, why can't we see the writing on the wall? We destroyed that fishery already. We destroyed that part of Mobile Bay. Why are we going to destroy something else with putting this new proposed island on top of a grass flat?
Got this unnamed texture said, the Upper Bay Marsh is not on grass beds. It's south of the grass in the deeper water. It'll block wave action and build more grass flats behind it. So it's saying that it's not in that area on the grass beds. If it's not on the grass flats that exist, then I'm for it. I just don't want to cover anything up.
I disagree. I've seen it on a map. You can see where all the little channels and everything are, and that there's a they call that tensile bar, and there is a lot of grass out there.
Yeah, and it also one thing. I mean, you spend a lot of time around the Delta, grass. Well, ribbon grass will stay longer, but yeah, different grasses depends if we have a wet year, if we have like a fresh year or
grass hyper is cyclical.
Yes, I mean, I learned that. I've worked on the grass planting projects with AWF or actually Mobile County Wildlife for so many years, and some years we go out and plant the sprigs and it'd be good. Some years we're like, oh, That didn't work. You know, it's not as easy as you have a pond because the salinity is going to change year to year where it is. But the areas where it can grow on its own, I want to keep that.
Right.
And I like to make new one. And that's Texture saying that it's going to be far enough south to be out of that.
Well, we have very little info right now on exactly how it's going to be constructed and all of the details on the project. So I wouldn't say I've been out there to the exact proposed location because I don't have that information.
But okay,
I will be glad to when I get that.
And I do want to see that.
Go out there and do my own survey on it.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not, like I said, if it's not covering up a grass flat that exists right now, I'm 100% behind this project. I mean, I'm all for it. Let's see. Joel in Somerdale says, because it's already about money, they don't give a blank about the bay. Who's everybody? I mean, I think there might be somebody who fits into that, but there's a lot of people involved that do think care. Of course, here's a grown-up question. We were talking at the end of the last hour about the naming of birds and how I think it was scientists that spent too many months away from women when they got the names. Michael says, can you ask Richard if he got to see any blue-footed boobies during his world travels with the Navy? You ever notice that you go back and look at bird names and go,
oh, yeah.
These guys really needed to go see the women. They yeah. needed to spend a little time around the girls.
Same thing about the ships that are offshore, too. Yeah. You know, you see the names of the ships. You're like, where did someone get that from?
Because they've been around a bunch of guys too long is what it is. This texture says, y'all are incorrect about the presence of grass where the Upper Bay Marsh Project will be constructed. It was designed and placed specifically to avoid SAV, which is submerged aquatic vegetation. And none of the regulatory agencies would permit construction on active SAV beds. So that's... But this is, listen, if I can be shown, this is the problem, is what I was looking at is, it may be from the item that came out 4 years ago or something like that, it looked like it was on tensile bar.
It does. Like I've gone to the website, to the Port Authority's website where they talk about, there's a lot of literature on there, but there's no exact location. They show you a map of where it looks like it's going to be. And like I said, I look at maps for a living.
Mm-hmm.
To find things. Mm-hmm. And it looks to be closer than I'm comfortable with. How about that? Is that okay to say?
Okay.
Putting a restoration project closer than I'm comfortable with to a natural grass bed, to something that is, like I said, is beautiful up there.
Now, I wonder if you could phase it in. If you could phase it in as not stepping on tensile bar, but as a continuation
right.
of tensile bar. And it would bring all that together.
Right. And what I saw is there's like a 5, 10, 15, and 20-year plan where they're going to create, I think it's 1,200 acres of this wetland area.
I love all that.
Within the first 5 years is only, I think, 100 acres. It's a very small very
but 100
small
acres still,
chunk.
You picture that out there. That's significant. Yeah.
That's a lot.
I mean, you picture, we can spot Goat Island, and Goat Island's, a quarter acre? So,
probably.
Yeah, so right. something like that.
Billy, and it is going to start from the south, and they're going to work their way north, and it's going to go all the way from the Tensile River all the way over there to Crabber's Ditch.
Is it how far over?
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's like the northwest corner of where they're going to finish up. That's in the 20-year plan.
Right.
Is going to be right at the mouth of Crabber's Ditch.
Billy D says, when it comes to grasses, it's all about turbidity. If you can control the turbidity, then the grasses will grow. Unfortunately, we have a lot of turbidity in Mobile Bay with all the actions. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I agree. That's one of the things that you talk about, both of us wanting to work with nature. If you can get it started, whether you're building wetlands or oyster reefs, if you don't have these other problems on it, if you can start it growing, it's like starting a boat engine. You get it started, and now right. it's running. Now it starts doing it on its own, but you have to have the action, whether it be you pull it on the engine or hitting the battery. You got to start it, and then it can take over.
That's the big issue that I always see when you look around the bay is things are not creating themselves out there. They are just disappearing, it feels like.
100%. And then, by the way, we're grown up show here. Ultra Runner said, nothing says a lonely ornithologist quite like Dick Sissel. It's one of the birds out there. I'm telling you, just go look at a bird book, y'all. You'll be amazed yourself. I think that's great. And I'm getting people who are texting me and saying, hey, no, it's not where. Just then let's put it on the map. Let's plot the GPS coordinates for what it's going to look like so people could be assured that it's not. Because if it's not, I am 100% for this project.
Right. We'll bring Ben Raines and he can scuba dive down there and tell us what's down there, right? He loves to get wet.
I like to scuba dive too. I just like to have visibility over 6 inches. Right. Some of the stuff that Ben dives, I'm like, I don't want to do that dive. That's not fun. Where you have to look at your bubbles to figure out which way's up.
That's right.
It's a weird feeling, man. You're like, this is no good.
I haven't experienced that yet.
Yeah, I've been going through a pocket of fresh water. You could put your hands on the front of your mask and just see them there.
Ugh.
You have to watch the bubbles go up to figure out your orientation.
That's scary.
It's not. It makes my head get swimmy even talking about it. Let's see. Michael says, seriously, though, I hear there's a chance of some locks and dams may not be replaced when their life cycle ends. Most of the time, bigbies are nearing their end stage. Yeah, I don't know where that. I've heard rumors of that. I have not heard that that's going to.
I haven't heard anything either.
Yeah, that they would. And here's the problem. I mean, if you perfect world, you'd probably. And this is not going to happen. You would close back off the Tom Bigby from Tennessee.
Right.
You close that back off. The other one we've talked about is keeping the locks open on like the Alabama and all that to let, you know, but we got to balance it. I'm not all, you know, we as a state depend on our rivers and our bay to make a living.
Right.
You know, I know it's Alabama's port. I call it Port of Mobile. I'm a homer. I like Port of Mobile. I like the work that it brings to our area. I think we can do both things. I want a deepened and widened ship channel. I want to be the first place that ships come in off the Gulf and offload so they get top dollar for those things because we're deeper than the other. I like all that. But can we do that and then put that spoil somewhere else?
Yeah, and that's what I've been saying from day one. Let's not slow down progress. Let's not slow down growth in our area. But let's also be stewards of our environment. And take care of our environment first, because it's one of those things. Once you lose it and it's gone, you're never getting it back.
Right.
Look at the oysters, you know. Look at the oysters. We used to have one of the biggest oyster fisheries in the country was in Mobile Bay, and now there are none, just about.
But it's very limited.
There is one reef in Alabama that is sometimes harvestable, you know.
Yeah, sometimes not. Yeah.
And all the oyster guys, I mean, that's just that's a dying way to make a living as being an oysterman.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as natural oysters,
the oyster farming is
oyster farming is awesome.
Yeah.
I think that's really neat. Those guys
But the nature of that too is to get those oysters because of the turbidity, they got to raise oysters up.
Right. Correct.
So I
keep them up out of that.
Right. I mean, that's what they figured out. Right. You know, how do we recreate the amount of light and the amount of groceries for those oysters? Well, we got to raise them up versus them being on the bottom because light doesn't get down far enough and there's not enough phytoplankton, right? And plankton down there for them to eat. So, I mean, that's kind of it's an example of what we had to do to deal with that. And maybe we can continue to do more of that. All right. Can you hang out for the rest of the hour? We're about done here. I want to pick your brain on where you're fishing right now.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, let's go. Then we come back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, top 152, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday. And good to see Virginia Guy, Executive Director at the Drug Education Council, back in studio. Hello, Virginia.
Hi, it's good to be back.
Good to have you back. What y'all got coming up?
Monday, August 31st, we have a concert. It's National Overdose Awareness Day. And it's also the eve we're kicking off the September month for Recovery Month. So we're bringing in singer-songwriter John McAndrew from Nashville, who's going to do a concert down at Gulf Quest.
Okay, so, Gulf Quest has the musical angle now. I mean, you'd be like, hey, you're coming to the Jimmy Buffett Museum. So it's
right.
Let's talk about this too. With that, you know, the recovery month in September starting. Tell me some good news. Are we on your front? Are we doing better on the opioid side?
We are. We've the good news, we've lost way too many. That's
absolutely
the bad news. But the good news is it does look like those numbers are trending down. So
what do you attribute that to?
Well, I think it's a whole lot of different things. I think there's more enforcement at the border. I think law enforcement is getting a lot of these off the streets. I think we're getting more people into treatment, raising awareness. People are aware of the problem. You know, so I think there's a lot of things contributing to the trend downward.
Okay. Well, that, I mean, it's a good thing.
We're still losing way too many.
Absolutely. And that was the thing. So I talked to the sheriff about that, and mm-hmm. he said the same things, you know, talking about trending down. I said, that's great. But still, we have cases. And is that, at this point, people can, they know. I mean, you've put the information out. You've been mm-hmm. doing this a long time. Right. So they know the dangers of this, not just the opioid, but then they, you know, here comes fentanyl. Mm-hmm. And they're using this. I can't believe anybody doesn't know. So hopefully we get more people into treatment because, I mean, it's an idea that in the past maybe people didn't know the dangers of this, but they all know now. Right.
Well, you know, and I've never met anybody who meant to become addicted.
True.
Nobody ever. Whether they started out using because they were partying and having a good time, or whether they started out using because they were treating real pain, you know, and when you cross that threshold, you know, it changes your brain, and you really do have those cravings, and that that's very, very difficult. It's difficult to get off of drugs. It really is.
So what are we doing to help them with that? Like not just treatment and talking, but what kind of, I mean, there are programs here to make that getting off it easier. It's still not easy, but right. Make it easier, right?
There are so many resources in the community depending on what's going on. In fact, we're going to have a resource fair going along with this concert. We've got more than 20 agencies and organizations in the community that will be there talking about their programs, everything from, you know, detox to early intervention to treatment to recovery support. There's all kinds of resources in the community. So if anybody's worried about themselves or somebody else, please contact me. I can connect them with the appropriate resources to get the help that they need.
I mean, the help is that close.
Yes, we've got the help in the community. It's really just sometimes it's not just a one-stop place. Sometimes you have to go to a couple of different places. Like you may need detox and recovery support. You may need detox and long-term treatment. You know, there's different things
for
different
people.
What
are barriers for people? I mean, obviously the addiction, not wanting to get off the thing. But are there barriers like, hey, I'd like to do this, but I still have to hold down a job or I have to do, I mean.
Right. Well, one of the biggest barriers actually is stigma. You know, there's a lot of shame in this. And, you know, like I said, nobody means to become addicted. And
right.
It is, you know, some people refer to it as a disease. Some people refer to it as a brain disorder. You know, drugs really, when you become addicted, it hijacks your brain. And, you know, that primal part of your brain takes over the executive functioning. So, you know, that's why we see the levels of immaturity and those types of things when somebody is developing, you know, into addiction. It really does alter the brain. But we also know, the research has shown that when you get into recovery and stop using, the brain starts to heal. And so there's a lot of good news about the recovering brain.
That's good. And we learn more all the time. Once again, the event coming up on Monday.
Right, Monday, August 31st. It's going to be a lot of fun. John McGrander is a fantastic. He writes a lot of his own music. And he you know, he does a lot of interaction with the audience. He'll have people up on stage with him. And it's just going to be a lot of fun.
Are you getting up on stage?
I probably won't.
Come on, Virginia. Come on.
You need to come get on stage.
I'm not getting
us
on stage. Well, you get on stage. Somebody wants to see me. But at what time does it start?
The concert starts at 6. The doors are opening at 5, and the concert starts at 6. And one really cool thing, we've got all the buildings downtown lit up purple that evening. So once the sun goes down and the lights in the harbor come on, we'll also be able to see the lights on the RSA buildings being purple. And purple is the color of recovery.
Very good. And it is Monday, but it's all September long, too.
Right, and it's free. There's no charge. So we hope the community will come and find out about what's available in the community, have a lot of fun. Let's celebrate recovery. And we also want to remember those we've lost. We want to celebrate those that are in recovery, and we want to reach out to people who are still suffering.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the message I get from you, and I get so many times, is it's a tough decision for folks, but the resources are here. There are people waiting who have been through it themselves too.
Right. We have a very strong recovering community, and they're always willing, you know, they're so generous with their time and resources, and always willing to help get somebody into recovery.
Somebody wants to get more information online, or where do they go?
Right. They can look at all of our social media or go to our website, drugeducation.org, or call, or just come down to Gulf Quest.
Good stuff. Sounds fun. Virginia, it's always great to see you.
Thank you.
And you can chime in on this, too. But let me ask Captain Richard Rutland, if I'm fishing this weekend, where do I go?
Man, Mobile Bay's been great. I love hearing you talk about this addiction stuff. Do you have something for fishing addiction? Is there something that I have
that's
that really bad?
That's a healthy addiction. That's a fun,
it's
healthy.
It's my job. It's my hobby. It's my passion. Everything, you know?
Hey, nice to meet you, Richard. My name's Sean. I got the same problem. I know it's, you know, we say it on the air. It's silly to some people, but if you get the kids, spend time outside. I mean,
that's right.
You don't have time for anything else.
Yeah,
if you're trying to catch a fish.
It's really not hard to get them hooked either.
That's right. Know, pun intended.
On the good stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that was a dad joke.
Yeah, dad jokes live here. Virginia, it's always great to see you. Richard, likewise.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next.